Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, on the heels of the historic Women's March, we're going to be talking about women's issues. And my very special guest today is Bonnie Price. Bonnie is a Spring Valley resident, a lifelong feminist, an activist in the women's movement, and the past president of the East County Democratic Club, as well as an activist from the Hillary Clinton campaign for president. Bonnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Miriam. I relish the opportunity to speak up for women, just as we spoke up at our worldwide march for women's rights.
Yes, which attracted nearly 3 million people worldwide by the last count, and around 40,000, some say even 100,000 here in San Diego. But Bonnie, can you explain to our listeners what your reasons were for participating in the march?
My reasons for participating were many. Of course, the election situation with regard to Hillary Clinton was a primary motivator for me. I understand the Electoral College, as I am a political scientist, but her popular vote exceeded the incumbent president's vote by 2.8 million plus, and I thought it was an awful result that she couldn't become president because of our archaic Electoral College system.
And you've indicated it's more than just the Electoral College system, that while we've had a lot of talk about did the Russians hack things or were people upset about Hillary Clinton's emails, you have an interesting theory that it wasn't the emails, it was?
Well, it was the white males. And I took that from a sign I saw in the parade.
Interesting. So really you're saying there's some misogyny there, that there's still that prejudice, so to speak, against women in politics.
Of course. We have institutionalized sexism, and all you have to do is look at institutions like the federal government, where most of the representatives in Congress and in the Senate are men, and they make rules regularly about women's rights, and they try consistently to take them away. And they've done it in many states, and it's not just the government, it's also religious institutions, some of which prohibit women from serving as pastors and priests.
Yeah. We're certainly seeing a wave of states that have been passing restrictions on abortion, but also restrictions on access to birth control and all kinds of women's health services, whether that might be mammograms or pap smears, things that really can save women's lives. And I think there's also a sense among the young women. I saw a lot of young women this time. Some of them, it was their very first march, and they were participating with their mothers and their grandmothers. And, I had one who said her great-grandmother used to march for women's rights, and they just can't believe they're having to do this again. Didn't we solve things like, access to birth control a century ago, and yet it's still being fought out in the halls of Congress?
Yes, and the halls of Congress also, in fighting women's rights and access to birth control and health care choices that they make on their own, in those very same halls of Congress, they pass laws that favor men in their health care decisions, including allowing the federal government to pay for Cialis and Viagra.
Yeah.
If there's anything we don't need, is more children produced. We have too many people in the world already, and it's part of what's killing our planet.
Now, speaking of that issue, which is a global issue, this goes beyond the U.S. borders, in what seems like a slap in the face to the millions of women who were marching for women's rights on Saturday, on Monday, Donald Trump issued an executive order banning the U.S. government from funding any nonprofit organization anywhere in the world that provides abortion. And it isn't just blocking the money for abortion itself, which is controversial enough. It's blocking money for any services. So if you have a group that's, let's say, Let's say it's a country where there's heavy Zika virus and it's very dangerous for a woman to get pregnant. Her child, you know, could die or be left brain damaged and blind and deaf for life. They would not be allowed to fund an organization that provides birth control, for example, or health screenings for women, or, you know, prenatal care, or, you know, care for these infants that could be damaged. Do you see sort of a hypocrisy in that? I mean, it would seem to me that if somebody is pro-life and they really care about unborn babies, shouldn't they care about the babies that may be born damaged and taking care of women's health so that they can prevent a pregnancy like that?
Well, it's odd you should mention this particular situation, because you're assuming by what you say that members of Congress actually understand biology. And many of them have no idea at all what happens. And maybe they even deny the science of biology.
Yeah, we've heard these stupid statements. I'm going to say it. It's stupid. When we hear a member of Congress, as one of them did, talk about rape and suggest that if a woman resisted, she wouldn't get pregnant. These are completely false statements that somehow are used to justify, for example, not allowing the morning after pill, say for a rape victim or something like that.
Yes, ignorance breeds more ignorance, and institutionalized sexism just enhances that further. What we need to do is have the members of Congress and state legislatures realize that there are choices that are not really theirs to make. Women do most of the work on childcare and after birth, of course. They put most of their energy into the child's actual growth as a human being. But after they're born, they do most of the childcare and acculturation. If it weren't for women being able to do this work, who would do it? The men certainly wouldn't do it. They need to think about reality. Many of them have no idea what goes into raising a child. They have no idea that it's not just as easy as women make it look. So what we need to do is educate them, and in addition, set up a Bill of Rights for women that includes control over their own choices for health care.
You're talking like a constitutional amendment, maybe, so that women's health wouldn't be at the whim of every political administration.
Yes, but constitutional amendments come very hard, as we found when we were trying to get the Equal Rights Amendment passed.
Which never did get ratified.
No.
Fell a couple of states short there. You have been involved in your lifetime in helping establish a Planned Parenthood, I understand, Bonnie, which, of course, was in the news a lot last year in some controversial ways over, you know, tapes about late-term abortions at one particular Planned Parenthood clinic out of many. But for listeners that may not be familiar with everything that Planned Parenthood does and the importance that it plays in the roles of women and their families, especially in some rural areas where there may not be easy access to other healthcare clinics, can you educate listeners a little bit about what they may not have heard about Planned Parenthood?
Oh, yes. It's one of my favorite topics. I lived in Pennsylvania for a while, and during my time there, I was not only active in politics, but I helped set up one of the 20 largest Planned Parenthoods in terms of area in the country, in northeast Pennsylvania. We covered 9 counties in northeast Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Many of those counties were old open pit coal mines.
Wow.
And people were out of work. Jobs will never go back there, mainly because there's just nothing there to produce. And in many towns, we were the only health care in town. Mothers brought their children, brought their husbands. They got all kinds of family care that they would not get.
Really? So it's not only women that relied on the Planned Parenthood clinics for health care. It was men and children also.
Oh, yes. And in our urban areas, we had outreach workers going to schools, teaching the young about use of birth control. And at the time, it was, we had a severe outbreak of HIV, and people were in need of birth control, condoms, to protect themselves. In fact, some of our pastors who were involved with our Planned Parenthood were actually handing out condoms in church because they wanted to save lives.
Now, speaking of churches, you were telling me a story before we went on the air about a church that was maybe going over the line in politics in terms of recommending, again, a male candidate over a female one. Tell us about that.
Well, it happens all the time in certain places. It can be, it's usually Protestant, but Catholics do it too. From the pulpit, they say to their parishioners, vote for a certain candidate. And for them, Donald Trump, whom I consider a sexual predator, was recommended over a woman who has done nothing but work for human rights, children's rights, girls' and women's rights. They recommended a man who has been charged and...
who has boasted, we should say, of what amounts to sexual assault in most states, of groping women, grabbing women by their private parts without their consent.
Yes.
As well as making very derogatory statements, denigrating women's appearances. Anybody who criticizes them, whether it's, you know, Roseanne Barr or...
Carly Fiorina, oh.
Yeah, his Republican opponent. Look at that face, he said, yeah.
Judging women by their appearance is part of the institutionalization of sexism, misogyny.
Yeah, it seems like it's a very disturbing message for a president to be sending to the young people of America, to our daughters and to our sons. Is this the way that we want them to be treating women?
Yes, indeed. And strong men do not fear strong women, and they don't necessarily look at women only as sex objects. They look at them as life companions.
Yeah. So
they were marching in the parade on Saturday.
There you go. There you go. And one day after, we should note, after Donald Trump's administration took office and promptly took off things like equal pay and civil rights off of the White House website, LGBT rights, all those sections just vanished right off of the website.
And now the website consists of boasting about the prowess of Donald Trump. It's fascist to be using a public means of communication solely to boost the power and influence of a single individual.
Yeah, very, very, very troubling. Another thing that, of course, has concerned many feminists is that Donald Trump now has the power to appoint what could be the swing vote on the Supreme Court on cases such as reversing Roe versus Wade, the historic decision in 1973 that legalized the right to abortion, particularly in the early stages. It did give states some rights to regulate, you know, the later in the pregnancy that it was. And many states have carried that to the extreme now of passing legislation that may not currently be constitutional, that basically has completely eliminated access to abortion by finding ways to shut the clinics down and so forth. And yet, you know, will a Trump administration even try to enforce those laws? I would like to ask you, Bonnie, as someone, you know, of an older age group than many of our listeners may be, do you remember back, were you involved in the feminist movement back before abortion was legal in America?
Indeed, and I was a college professor, and I had to assist young women who were choosing to have an abortion. The only safe, legal way to get it in Pennsylvania, where I was working at the time, was to make a connection with a group of pastors called the Clergy Consultation,
mm-hmm.
and give them the name and contact information of young women who wanted safe legal abortions. And the only way they could get it was to go to a hospital in Philadelphia where they had to have three physicians, including one psychiatrist, certify that they should have an abortion so that their mental health would be protected.
That was before Roe versus Wade?
Yes.
So it was legal in some states under certain limited conditions back then, and of course other states it was completely illegal.
And it was very costly to get a safe legal abortion.
So if you were rich, you could afford it, and if you were poor, maybe not.
Right.
The women who might need it the most, arguably.
Yeah, it cost $800 in pre-Roe versus Wade. That mm-hmm. was prior to 1973.
I'm old enough to remember that there were many cases in San Diego County here of women who literally died because they would go south to Tijuana. You know, we're a border community, and even though abortion was illegal nationally, that didn't mean you couldn't go over the border and risk your life in often very unsanitary conditions. UCLA had an awful lot of patients that they treated who bled to death or had infections and were never able to have children after that because of getting illegal abortion. So banning it doesn't necessarily prevent women from getting it, but it does certainly make it much more dangerous for the women and for their future children.
Exactly. And legislators do not think about the possibility of having their own wife or their own daughter have the need for a legal abortion. That is the legislators who are trying to restrict it.
Maybe we should talk a little bit about, you know, when we say need for abortion, I can hear, almost envision some people cringing at that and saying, well, wait a minute, you know, it's the taking of a life in the opinion of many people. But there's also the mother's life to consider. And I know I personally have known women who had pregnancies that were life-threatening for the mother had they been continued. I worked with a young woman who had an ectopic pregnancy, which is where the egg becomes embedded in the tube. And if you don't abort, the tube bursts. The woman very often will die. And if not, she may be left sterile and never have another child. It's very, very dangerous. And actually, one in every 50 to 100 pregnancies in the U.S. is a tubal pregnancy. People don't realize that. And that's per Bush administration's health department statistics. That's not from some liberal, you know, Obama administration statistics. So that's just one example. I had another, you know, friend who had such extreme high blood pressure that they warned her that carrying a pregnancy to term could kill her. She actually chose to take the risk and, thank goodness, had a healthy baby. But what if that had gone the other way? You know, so I guess the bottom line is, do we really want to take away the choice of women, not only where it might be a healthy mother, healthy baby situation, but what if it's an unhealthy mother or an unhealthy baby? I had another friend where she got the very bad news at 7 months that her baby had all of the organs growing on the outside of the body, a hole in the heart. This was not a baby that could be saved. And yet, if these laws go through, someone like that would be forced to carry that to term.
Yes. Yes, and I can think of numerous cases since I was so involved with Planned Parenthood.
Could you share one or two?
Well, there was one. There was a friend of mine who was a good Catholic nurse, went all the way through Catholic school, including nursing school.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband abused her, and out of one of these abusive encounters they had, she became pregnant for the fourth time. She already had one child with fetal alcohol syndrome, and because she was becoming an alcoholic to try to deal with her abuse, and she called me and said, I'm pregnant. I don't want this. I can't handle it. And I said, well, get yourself an abortion if you think you need that. And I will support you. It's your choice.
Mm-hmm.
She talked to her physician, who worked at a Catholic hospital where she also worked. He referred her to a hospital across town that was secular. She got her abortion, and she said it's the best decision she ever made. so she did not bring into the world another child with fetal alcohol syndrome.
Yes, sometimes it's a matter of really the lesser of two evils, because obviously there's severe consequences, you know, to a child in either of those scenarios. So it really boils down to who should be making that decision. Should it be the government, or should it be the mother, the family, you know, the advice of the doctor in these very, very, very heart-wrenching situations? And then we have the situations of very young children that are raped. I did an interview at a national conference on family violence, ironically on 9/11, you know. And there were these heartbreaking stories. There was a young girl who had been raped repeatedly by her father, and the courts wouldn't believe her and gave custody back to him, and she couldn't get away until she was 18. She got pregnant by her own father, and this was in one of these southern states where there's a waiting list, and the court wouldn't believe her, and she couldn't get the abortion. So she actually had a child of incest. Others, they talked about these sad stories of 12-year-old girls who were physically just too small to even safely give birth, some of them, who'd been raped. Often it was incest, and where it was very dangerous, and they would have to have a cesarean section if they, you know, if they carried it through. So these are just things that we should think about. I'm not the moral police. I'm not going to cast judgment on a decision that anybody makes in those situations. But, it certainly seems that just this blanket saying, I'm pro-life, but you're not thinking about the lifelong impact on a woman, on the other children in the family, you know, on her future ability to have healthy children, maybe, or on her very life. These are things that should also be weighed, I think, when we consider these kinds of laws.
And the big issue that's never really addressed here is that a lot of these legislators who want to take away women's rights on this issue are, in effect, foisting their particular brand of religion on those who do not necessarily share it. We're supposed to have freedom of religion in this country, not embody in our laws the religion of a particular set of believers.
Very true. It should be noted that abortion is not considered a sin in some religions. So there's also a hypocrisy element. I remember when I worked in Sacramento, there was a legislator up there, John Schmitz, right-winger, card-carrying John Birch Society member, and he was one of the leaders of the anti-abortion movement up there. And it came out that this married man with kids had a mistress, and that he'd gotten her pregnant, and it turned out she was physically abusing the baby. And he justified this by saying, well, at least I didn't make her get an abortion.
Wow.
And yet, here he was, you know, passing judgment on other people when he was doing something that many people would consider to be very immoral.
Of course.
You know, so it's kind of sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. But he just, I just thought that was tremendously hypocritical, that if you expect everybody else to lead a moral life, to not have sex outside of marriage, you know, unless you're willing to have an unborn baby, an out-of-wedlock baby to care for, by banning abortion, banning access to birth control, all of these things, then maybe you should be setting an example yourself in how you conduct your own lives. And a lot of these guys aren't doing that, you know. We look at Trump himself, who boasted on Howard Stern's show and other places about his infidelities and, you know, cheated on one wife with the future wife and so forth.
Yes, morality is in the eye of the beholder, evidently. Those who preach most frequently about morality as legislators often have none themselves. And I say that in a blanket statement because if you look at many of them, they are doing the same things that you just described.
Yeah. Well, Bonnie, what's the takeaway from all of this? I know that a lot of people have felt frustrated, afraid, powerless maybe, in light of Trump's election. Obviously, there's a lot of people out there who voted for him, who agree for him, who agree with him, who think he's going to make America great again. But for those who don't and who are concerned about women's issues and some of these other things, and you've mentioned, by the way, that that really every issue is a woman's issue. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, I want quote Senator Kamala Harris, who said at the March on Washington, in Washington, D.C. on Saturday.
Yeah, California's newly elected senator, replacing Barbara Boxer, who retired.
Yes, and our former attorney general for 8 years. She said, when people talk to her about women's issues, she said, yes, I'll talk to you about women's issues. Let's start with economic issues, because women need equal pay for equal work, because they support families, mm-hmm. and they need to have good education systems, because their children go to those schools. And any other issue you can think of is a woman's issue. Women hold up half the sky. That's from the Indians, our Aboriginal friends here.
I love that quote.
And we do hold up half the sky. We just don't get recognized for all the work that we do. Mm-hmm. A lot of women's work is not paid. We still haven't arrived at the place where we allow women to take time out to have a child and properly start it off. Mm-hmm. In Britain, where my daughter lives, her first 6 months, she had time free to raise her child, begin the child's growth on a proper basis, and she got a regular stipend from the British government.
Wonderful.
And I can't recommend their system highly enough. I think it's the way it should be.
And we should add here that some countries also give men time off when a child is born so that they can bond with the father and the father can spend time at home helping the mother. I'm sure everyone who's raised a child would appreciate that.
Oh, yes. It's very tiring, very hard on a woman, first of all, to have a child. Mm-hmm. This is established mm-hmm. by those in the obstetrics profession. They say that women's bodies are not properly evolved to handle a lot of childbirth,
oh,
and it does take a lot of energy to feed a child in utero, and especially male children. It takes a half year off of every woman's life if she has a son.
No kidding.
No kidding. So every son you have is 6 months less for a woman to live.
So you're saying boys are more of a handful than girls.
More uterus full. Yes. It's very demanding on women's body.
Fascinating. I'd never heard that one before.
And Leonard Schlain wrote several books about women's issues and health care. He's a surgeon from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I just love his way of looking at life. He's a very feminist man. And he has made quite a name for himself, speaking out just from the standpoint of a physician regarding a woman's life as a mother and with an infant in utero.
Standing up for women's rights is really something that all of us can do on an individual basis as well as collectively on a massive nationwide or global basis. I'm going to just share an anecdote or two from my own life and those people I've known. I once worked for a woman who, back in the day here, she was one of the early women executives at a company in San Diego, and, you know, she was just tired of the old boys' club. They would all go down to a certain bar and hang out and have these networking meetings, and women weren't allowed, and she was quite a formidable woman physically, with kind of a steamroller kind of a personality. And one day she and a couple of other women just went in there and they just decided they weren't going to stand for this anymore. And they sat down, and much like the black people who integrated diners in the South by refusing to leave, that's pretty well what they did. And forever after, that was integrated and women got to be part of what had been the old boys' network. I worked at a job in a music store when I was only 18, 19 years old. And I was told, even though I'd had 10 years of piano lessons at the time, honey, the girls work in the sheet music and records department, and the men sell the pianos and organs, which, of course, was the commission sales where you actually made the money. And thankfully, we had a rather enlightened younger assistant manager who told me there was no reason I couldn't learn this. And he taught me how to write credit applications and how to take a piano apart and show all the parts inside. And one day, boy, it's coming down rain. If, listeners, if you're wondering, we've got quite a hailstorm going on outside our studio, so we'll just keep going. Bear with us. But One day the men were all out delivering pianos just before Christmas. Someone came in and wanted to buy an organ for his family for Christmas, his wife, and I sold it to him. And when the manager got back and I presented him the check, he just turned purple and you could tell he was furious. You can't do that. I said, well, no problem. I'll call the customer. I'll just tear this check up and I'll call the customer back and tell him that, you know, you don't want women selling to him. And, you know, I guess we just lose the sale because it needed to be delivered tonight. And he looked right at me and he said, oh, all right. So, you know, they pocketed the couple $1,000 from that sale. And after that, he decided I could be the first woman salesperson in that company. And next thing you know, I was partnering up with him to, because he didn't play the piano. He could sell, but he couldn't play. And he would call me over, and we would split the sales at first. And then pretty soon I was making them on my own. And after that, they started hiring women in the commission sales department. So we all need to just stand up for injustice.
Yes, we do.
When we see it.
Women can do anything if they want to and if they're allowed to. I, as a political scientist of a certain age, I can tell you, I hardly ever had a woman political scientist in my graduate school years. In fact, I had one professor take me out to the faculty club after my class, first mm-hmm. class in my master's level, and he said, now why would a married woman want to learn more political science at the graduate level?
Oh.
And I said, well, because I'm curious. I want to learn as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, I think it's very odd that you do that.
Yeah. So those of us that have been through that era where we just had to fight for what women today really take for granted, we see the potential for the clock to be rolled back on women's rights, which is way more than reproductive rights. That's one part of the equation, but it's just, you know, everything else, equality in the workplace, equal pay, all of these different things, the right to vote even, which has only been around, you know, for less than a century
yeah.
right now. What's the takeaway, Bonnie, for all the women out there who marched in the march, and maybe others who didn't but wished they had? How can they stay involved, stay informed, and be active in standing up collectively for the rights of women in this current administration?
Well, those who went on the march, of course, are connected with the Women's March in Washington. And
which has a website, right?
Yes, you can go to the website and see what they recommend. But I'm one who says to myself, okay, I just heard Congress is attempting to do a certain thing that I do not like. Mm-hmm. I am calling my members of Congress.
Yeah, the Women's March, on their webpage, they've announced they're going to be putting forth a series of actions. I believe they're saying, you know, an action every week or every 10 days, something like that, that they're collectively urging everybody to take. And it won't be only women's issues. It might be a civil rights issue or something else. So you can certainly pick and choose, but they're saying that if everybody got involved, and that means contacting their members of Congress and their senator every week on at least one issue collectively, the voices could be very, very large. Because when Congress operates in the dark, in the vacuum, before the era of social media, you were much less apt to see things, you know, put through that maybe weren't in the interests of a lot of the American people. And now, if there's hope, I think we saw it with this ethics vote where Congress, a couple weeks ago, they were going to vote to gut the Ethics Commission. They actually did vote to gut the Ethics Commission that oversees ethics in Congress. And there was such an outcry and, you know, zillions of people calling and emailing and faxing their members of Congress voicing outrage that they backed down and they changed that vote and they undid that. So there is some hope that even with single party control right now of everything, if people speak out enough, things can change.
Yes, and there's a guide put out by former staffers called Indivisible, and you can get it online. Go to the website Indivisible. And you can get make it your own copy,
mm-hmm.
and then put that into action as well.
Another thing is the issue of more women running for office. You know, I've heard a lot of women say they are sick and tired of men deciding on laws that affect women so much? What's being done to recruit more women to run for political office, Bonnie?
Well, I'm part of a group in San Diego County that has championed women to run for office for quite a while now. It's called Run Women Run. We reach out and find women who will be pro-choice and run for office.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a long live group called League of Women Voters, and they encourage women to learn and get involved in political action.
Yeah, they actually have a lot of good educational information about the different issues and
yes.
where different politicians stand, so you can look it up and find out how your member of Congress is voting, or your state legislator, for that matter.
Yes, and the Democratic Party is very supportive of women candidates. Now, if you look at East County this past fall general election, unfortunately, we only had 32% of our candidates who ran or won as women.
Still in a very red district.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of the mega churches there do not believe that women should be running for office. So we have an entrenched sexist organization, or set of them, who discourage women from even disobeying their husbands.
Yeah, I think it's very disturbing to me that something as fundamental as women's rights too often has become a partisan issue. It shouldn't be. Shouldn't everybody be supportive of women's rights on some level? But we seem to see a lot of misogyny sometimes in the local party. I've even seen it where, you know, the Republican Party had very prominent, very well-respected women in their own party, you know, business leaders, Chamber of Commerce leaders, people who had put in their dues for their party, and yet when they turned around to run for office, they'd go and endorse some man who had zero experience. I can think of one example of a chamber leader who'd run for office before, you know, had served on city councils. And when she turned around to run for another local council, they were endorsing a man whose only real qualification was he was a church buddy of the council member that was retiring with no political experience. And it just seemed to be so sexist to me.
It is. And women actually do work harder at their jobs, even if they're part-time, when they get elected.
Very often that's the case. I hate stereotyping, but it is often the case.
Well, there are so few of them. They're very visible.
Mm-hmm.
In order to run for office, you really have to have a strong ego and be able to take a lot of punches, some of which are not deserved at all.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be able to deal with the issues and with the negative comments made about you. Women, for example, are considered too aggressive if they decide to stand up and say
oh,
no.
Yeah. They'll use the B word.
Yes.
Right.
And other, the C word as well.
Yeah.
And women should not allow that to be done to themselves. They should run in spite of it.
Yeah, if a man does the same thing, very often they'll say, well, he's forceful. He's showing leadership. He's,
yes.
You know, he's being assertive.
And if she's doing it, she's aggressive. And as you said, the B word,
mm-hmm.
and also the C word. So women are held to different standards than men, and they're very often discouraged by their own families. I lived with that for a
mm-hmm.
while,
mm-hmm.
but I could see what it was doing to me. I did not want to stop what I was doing in politics, so I decided for myself I didn't need to be held back by a man for any reason at all.
Good for you, Bonnie. And I want to let listeners know, by the way, that when we were talking earlier about reaching out to members of Congress, if you're not happy with what's going on there, if you go to our website at eastcountymagazine.org and you click on the, there's a button up there where you can get involved, it lists the contact information for all of the members of Congress. And if you don't know whose congressional district you're in, there's a link where you can look that up as well. And reach out. Let them hear from you. whatever your views are, even if you disagree with what I'm saying.
Oh, sure.
Or what Bonnie is saying. It's your right as an American to speak your views, but if they don't know what you're thinking, then you may not like how they're voting.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, I've talked with elected officials for many years, and I've usually gotten them to agree with me. And I'll never forget, years ago I went with a group of people to visit my Congress member. We sought to get women's equality in the military. And he said, absolutely not. Well, I'm proud to say that now women can serve in all areas of the military. And they can become officers. They can fight for their country, literally. They are no longer sidelined. They can move up the ranks to general. And some women have. And I just hope the current Trump administration's misogyny does not reach into the military and deter women who want to serve their country in the military from doing so. It's your right. You should fight for it, and you should fight for your country if that's what you want to do.
Well, there you go. And again, you can go to Run Women Run, and if you're fired up and you want to run for office, I've always loved the slogan that a woman's place is in the House and the Senate.
And the Oval Office.
There you go. Well, hopefully one of these days, maybe we'll actually see the ultimate glass ceiling broken. Bonnie, it's been a pleasure to have you here. Do you have any final words for our listeners today as we're starting to run short on time?
Oh, I say get involved, women. And do it for yourself, do it for your daughters, do it for your granddaughters.
I want to thank you very much, Bonnie, for joining us today. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Bonnie Price. Bonnie is a longtime feminist. She's active in Run Women Run, which is a nonpartisan organization recruiting women for public office. She's also involved, as you've heard, in the East County Democrat Club as well. She's a longtime women's rights activist and participated in the historic Women's March. Thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much for having me.